Good evening. This is Syndicated News. I'm Raymond F. Rivas, Chief Financial Editor, and my firm is Atherton Wealth Planning. And you can meet, and you can email me at Rivas at syndicatednews.net. You're listening to Syndicated News Net, brought to you this evening by Shadow Operations LLC. And our guest this evening is Mr. Charles W. Day. Charles, are you there?
I am here, Ray.
Charles is the owner of the Actuarial Business Solutions. It's an LLC. It's a nationally recognized as the premier source for innovative actuarial pension and estate planning solutions. Charlie is an enrolled agent, certified pension consultant, chartered life underwriter. Charlie spent 27 years in the insurance industry before founding Actuarial Business Solutions back in 1994. He brought into existence an idea that's kind of, I feel, has revolutionized this industry known as the Charlie Plan. He's the president and CEO, and his offices are located at 102 Broadway Avenue, Suite 200. And Charlie, first question I have for you, what exactly does your firm do?
Well, Ray, we are consulting actuaries. We're a firm of six actuaries who practice before the IRS as enrolled actuaries. In that capacity, we certify the deductions that our clients take in sponsoring defined benefit plans.
Mm-hmm.
And the Joint Board for the Enrollment of Actuaries have empowered our profession to be the watchdog between the clients who desire to sponsor defined benefit plans and the Treasury, who looks to us to assert that what the clients, our clients, are doing are legitimate.
Do you do new plans and existing plans?
All forms of retirement plans.
Mm-hmm. And Charlie, you've been in this business for what, 27 years? What fascinates you?
Actually, it's pushing closer to 35, right?
35.
I spent my first 27 years as an actuary at the Connecticut General and then Cigna, mm-hmm. where we designed defined benefit plans for our clients. And then 15 years ago, I left Cigna and formed a firm that whose specialty was to give people advice on how to establish sophisticated defined benefit plans that would give them high deductions on the one hand and help provide long-term financial security and estate tax avoidance on the other.
Well, I think by the more I read about your firm, what makes it so fascinating is not only do you go ahead and solve the retirement plans for individuals and various businesses, but you also go ahead and you address the estate plan. The result is...
You really have, if you look at the a range of financial planning issues,
mm-hmm.
you can really boil them down into four fundamental buckets. Income tax planning, which involves deductions and deferral and conversion and diversion of monies that otherwise be subject to income tax.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have the retirement planning bucket, which is a area where you want to provide long-term financial security, not only for yourself, but for your spouse. Then you have the estate planning bucket, which the way our tax structure is set up, the government is ready there to collect income and estate taxes on the money that you've developed in a retirement system. And there are ways in which you can avoid the estate tax. And then there is the business continuity bucket, In other words, how do you create resources so that you can leave a business, but in leaving the business, you leave it intact for the next generation? And so we've developed financial planning solutions that address those four fundamental areas: income tax, retirement, estate, and business continuity planning.
So,
I mean,
That's
a mouthful, isn't it?
You can say that. How did you get started in this industry? How did you get into this area? It seems to be very complicated. Obviously, it takes a superior mind to keep all the pieces going. How did you get started?
It goes back to the late 60s and early 70s, where I was just a plebe in a big insurance company, and that's when I found that if you were an actuary, you had a sense of the black box. So I decided to become an actuary. And during the next 27 years, with the advent of the pension legislation in 1974, commonly known as ERISA, I became not only an actuary, but an enrolled actuary, someone who's qualified to practice on retirement matters before the Internal Revenue Service. And that became a badge of courage in a way, because you were really plowing new ground, interfacing between the public and the government. And the government created these regulations, and the actuary has to be the steward of those regulations and also a steward of the client's objectives. It was during that period that I began to understand the ramifications of what people were creating in these retirement plans. They were creating tremendous assets, but then the government started changing the rules and started to impose estate taxes on retirement plans. And I said, wow, if I have a retirement plan that I have rights to the assets, I have the right to pay estate taxes.
Well, that's not good.
But corporations that provide retirement plans where the participant doesn't have a right to estate doesn't have a right to the assets, there are no estate taxes. So then I said, if I bring the principles of large plans down to small business owners, I could provide them a way in which they could create long-term financial security for themselves and their spouse, but the assets that are providing this financial security is not going to be subject to estate taxes.
That's the most difficult problem that I run into when I'm working with individuals. The trouble with the 401ks and the IRAs, the problem is that they work. And then those folks are facing these huge estate tax problems, and there's no way out of those type of problem by using the defined, what I think they call it, a defined contribution plan.
Well, a defined contribution plan really just defines how much you can contribute each year. And over time, putting in 25% of your income up to $45,000 can accumulate a lot of money, but at some point, you've got to take it out. And the government is there waiting to catch the income tax, but also when you die, they're waiting to catch the estate tax. And so I said, well, that's not good. And at the same time, some of us don't have the capacity in our young years to put away 25% of our compensation, and it's only in the later years that we can perhaps put a lot more in, and The laws provide for a second type of plan, which is called the defined benefit plan, where you can make up for the years that you didn't put money in and exceed this 25% or $45,000 of annual contribution. And it's those clients that I have been addressing their financial needs by providing them a basis of being able to deduct $100,000, $200,000, $300,000, $400,000 a year, building a reserve for their long-term financial security. And a defined benefit plan allows you to do that. You're not confined to a contribution limitation. You're only confined to a benefit limitation. And so whatever it takes to fund that benefit, the rules and regulations allow you to do that.
Charlie, how exactly does a defined benefit plan work?
Well, a defined benefit plan really tells you how much you can get out of the plan at retirement. And basically, there are two sets of rules. If you're funding to a benefit that you have a right to go in and take all the money out, you have a lump sum right, the money that's funding your benefit, you can convert it to cash. Those rules say that you can fund to what is a single life annuity. That's your determinant. That tells you how much your maximum is. And at 65, that's about $2.3 million at age 65. Mm-hmm. And you accumulate that, that funds your defined benefit limit, which is about $15,000 a month, and you need $2.3 million in order to do that. Now, if the universe is divided into two, in defined benefit plans, it's divided into two universes. Those who operate under a lump sum and those who don't operate under a lump sum. And the code says if you don't have a lump sum right, if you can't go in and pull the money out, you can fund to a benefit based on two lives, you and your spouse, because one of the two of you are going to live longer than a single person.
Okay.
So you need more money to fund the same benefit. And that amount of money becomes, say, on the magnitude of $3.6 million versus $2.3 million. So most of my clients choose to fund to the larger amount because they're concerned about their long-term financial security. They want to make sure that they're not going to run out of money. So,
okay.
And if you look at those four buckets I talked about, here I'm dealing with the financial security of me and my wife. So I want to fund to this $3.6 million versus the $2.2 because I potentially will run out of money.
Okay, so what you're saying is, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Just for a moment, it sounds to me what you're saying is what you do is that you target as to how much income that family is going to be taking out on a monthly basis. In order to get that target, you have to put in so much money, and in doing so, the Internal Revenue Service will allow you to go ahead and put that money in so that you get those benefits.
Yeah. So let's say you're 55 years old. And you want to accumulate enough money so that you and your wife will have an income for the rest of your life. Well, the current law says that that benefit can be $15,400 a month.
Okay.
Or roughly $185,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
All right. If you're funding to a joint and survivor benefit, you need $3.6 million to get that.
What do you mean by joint survivor? You mean husband and wife.
Right.
Okay.
And now, so in 10 years, I need to fund to $3.5 million. The alternative is I fund to to my single life expectancy only. That's only $2.2 million. So I'm asking the business owner, which do you want to do? Do you want to fund for your long-term financial security for you and your wife, which is 3.6, or do you want to fund for your single life and have a lump sum rate of 2.2? And he said, well, I want to be able to deduct whatever it takes to get $3.5 million versus 2.2. I said, well, okay, you have to make a decision. Which road are you going to go down? Now, if you go down the joint and survivor route, then you're going to get a much greater deduction. But also, Ray, if put yourself in this 55-year-old position, you and your wife are going to live probably 30-some-odd years to age 90 or 95. And if you've been a good steward of that asset and you've earned more than the, say, 4 or 5% interest assumption we're using, the asset could still be there. Well, if you don't have a lump sum, the asset's not subject to estate tax.
Okay.
And if you've been, and if you've created an entity that your children can then become a participant to, they will be able to enjoy those assets without estate tax.
Charlie, I'm going to break away for a moment or two. I have to give our station identification, and I'll come right back to you. This is Syndicated News. I'm Raymond F. Rivas, Chief Financial Editor. Our firm is Atherton Wealth Planning, and you're listening to SyndicatedNews.net, brought to you this evening by Shadow Operations, LLC. And I'm going straight back to our special guest, Mr. Charles W. Day. And the discussion is going to be, we're discussing right now the defined benefit of plan and how that can be used by various business owners. What is a traditional defined benefit plan, and how does that differ from what you do?
Well, the traditional defined benefit plan is a plan where the participant has a lump sum right to plan assets to fund the benefit.
What do you mean by lump sum? Because you've used that word. What exactly does that mean? Is that like a 401k, and probably the best example, or an IRA, whereby you can say, I've got $2 million in my 401k, and so therefore, is that the lump sum distribution or the lump sum that you're talking about?
Yes, it's an account balance.
And so the traditional defined benefit plan has that $4 million as a lump sum. And
well,
so that lump sum, go ahead.
The lump sum right is tied to a value of a single life annuity that begins at normal retirement. Normal retirement is defined as earliest of age 62. And between age 62 and 65, you're allowed to receive $185,000 of annual pension over your life expectancy, single life expectancy. And that value is about $2.3 million. And so the value is your lump sum right.
Okay.
This lump sum right also is a statutory limitation. In other words, the code says that the value of this benefit, this single life annuity benefit of $185,000 a year, is a statutory limitation of the value of that benefit. And any amount that exceeds that value is subject to excise tax. So by having a lump sum right, you need to make sure that the account value of your retirement benefit is not greater than the statutory limit.
Okay.
And if you have employees in this plan, you have to pay when an employee quits, they must be paid their value of whatever benefit they've earned at the time they terminate. So in the traditional plan, everything is driven off of the value of the benefit. And as a result, the fact that you have this right means that this value is also subject to estate tax.
So if the lump sum, let's say, is $3 million, and when you pass away, that $3 million is subjected to the federal estate tax, which is a tremendous amount of money. I believe right now it's 45 cents on the dollar, and in a couple of years it's going to be a 55%, and that's just on the federal estate tax.
Exactly.
By the time you add in the income taxes that you must distribute, it gets to be a tidy sum of money.
Right. Now, what I did was when I looked at this issue, and when I was at Cigna, one of the things that they were doing was designing estate plans for their clients where they would control the asset, but it wouldn't be included in their estate for estate tax purposes. And I said to them, you know, I'm just a dumb actuary, but, you know, if you take the lump sum out of your retirement plans, you wind up doing the same thing. In other words, they were proposing things like creating an LLC or a family limited partnership where they would give non-voting units away to their children, basically reduce their ownership to 2%, but maybe that 2% is all voting, so they had total control without having the asset included in their estate. And I said, you know, you could do the same thing in a pension plan. If you take the lump sum provision out,
mm-hmm.
now you've eliminated this statutory limitation. You have no problem of what the value of the assets are relative to the benefit. And when you remove the lump sum provision, you can now fund for a joint life pension as opposed to a single life. You see, as long as you have a lump sum provision in a pension plan, you are tethered to the single life value of that benefit.
Mm-hmm.
You remove the lump sum provision, and you no longer have that tethering. And you, the code allows you to fund to a joint and survivor benefit. So when a plan is based benefit-based, all the rules change.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I'm a business owner, and I'm providing these benefits to my employees, and I'm giving them a lump sum right, Ray, who are the first people who benefit under such a plan? It's the people who quit.
Yes,
so I ask the business owner, what's the purpose of the plan? To provide financial security for your employees or to pay your people to leave? I mean, you should see their eyebrows raise. What? You mean you could have a plan that you don't have to pay out money to people until they get to retirement? Yes. We've been doing this for eons.
Well, can you give me an example? Now, Charlie, can you give me an example of any plans you've worked on recently whereby you were talking with maybe a group of doctors or talking with somebody and you said, well, let me show you what's possible. Do you have anybody you've been working on recently?
Well, you know, one of my biggest clients is a pharmaceutical company, Ray.
Uh-huh.
They have over 300 employees. And the pension that they provide for their employees. Now, buckle your seatbelt because this is going to blow your mind.
Well, hold on a second. I'm doing that right now.
All right. I ask you, what employer provides a pension benefit of 100% of your pay for both you and your wife as long as you live?
None that I can think
what?
Of.
No, no. But this is this pharmaceutical company is eating everybody's lunch in the pharmaceutical. Their salespeople are recruiting top guys from all the big pharmaceuticals, you know, Hoffman, mm-hmm. LaRoche, Klein, Beecham.
Mm-hmm.
These guys are just having a field day, because they're providing that level of financial security for their employees, 100% of their pay for both the employee and his spouse. Now, the catch is that the employee, if they quit, they have an earned benefit. They can come back at retirement and collect it, but there's no money that leaves the plan. If you have a lump sum right, the money would leave, but you have no lump sum right, so the money stays in the plan. So what you have is a family bank. The actuary is assuming 5% as a rate of return on assets. The investment management, up until this last year, was earning about 8 or 9. Mm-hmm. In fact, we just did the FAS 158 where we used 9% because that was about 90% of what their average rate of return had been for the last 6 years. The spread between their investment rate of return and the actuarial assumption, you know, it's like a bank. Your cost of funds is 3% and you're lending it out at 6. Pension plan, the liabilities are valued at 5 and you're earning 9. So if an employee leaves, the money that you've put in for that employee is a gain to the plan that helps finance other employees. So this recent case, I was down in Florida, just West Palm the other day, dealing with 6 cardiologists who were doing very well. They were all making in excess of $800,000. And I said, if you set up a plan for your employees, where you give them 100% of the benefit limits under the code, you trump all the discrimination provisions, and it will allow each one of you, each doctor here, to do exactly what he wants to do in his own plan. And the employee plan, if your average age is 30 and you have a 20% turnover, your costs over a 7-year period will start out at 20% of payroll and will probably go to zero in 7 years as a result of turnover.
Oh my gosh.
And the freedom that you have, each one of you, to dial in what contribution you want to make. Under the new pension rules, under the Pension Protection Act, the contribution ranges are designed to encourage plans to be fully funded very quickly. So what I told each one of the doctors is, create your own plan, maximize the potential benefits of those employees who stay with you, and you will have the freedom to dial whatever contribution you want year in and year out and decide what kind of income tax you want to pay. I mean, that's absolute financial freedom from managing the income tax liabilities that you're faced with every year.
My gosh. Now, your literature that I've read refers to your plan as a Charlie plan. What exactly is a Charlie plan?
Well, you know, my wife really gives me a rough time. She says, why do you call it the Charlie Plan? I said, well, one of my friends named it, and it's an acronym.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could tell you, Ray, that we spent millions of dollars with an advertising firm in New York, but that's not true. It was one of my friends in Cleveland that said, this is so good. He said, I've got an acronym for you. And I said, okay, Howard. What is it? He said, well, the C is a concept of income tax, retirement, estate, and business continuity planning. Mm-hmm. Okay, I got the C. What's the H? He said, who is it for? High-income people who want, on an income tax-deductible basis, to do what? A is take their assets and move it off their balance sheet beyond the claims of creditors and IRS and do it on a deductible basis. Okay, so I got the CHA. Okay, what's the R? He said, you're so dumb. I said, I know it. I said, he said, the R, Charlie, is retirement. You want to provide a retirement income for as long as you and your wife lives. And if you're a good steward of the assets, to keep it in pace with inflation. Hey, I said, Howard, you're selling me. Okay, what's the L? He said, Charlie, there you go again. L is you use life insurance in the plan as an investment grade bond equivalent on the one hand to increase deductions under the plan that you would otherwise not be able to get, and on the other hand, have a better asset allocation model, and at the death of the participant, the insured participant, you use the insurance policy to get an income tax-free distribution of some of the plan assets from the plan. Whoa, Howard, this sounds pretty good.
It
okay, what's
great.
The I?
Mm-hmm.
What's the I? Well, the I is you can accomplish this on a reasonable rate of return, 4 or 5%. All these financial issues will fall in place. But if you earn more than 4 or 5%, let's say 6, 7, or 8,
mm-hmm.
you build in an automatic cost of living increase adjustment, and the assets will remain intact, which will lead you to the E, which is an estate planning strategy that allows you to bypass the total estate tax structure because you only manage this benefit structure. You don't own it, so it's not subject to estate tax. It's like having a dynasty trust
mm-hmm.
in a pension plan. So that's how we came up with the acronym, the Charlie
and
plan.
And that was a friend of yours that came up with that acronym.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, I have no originality there.
And it wasn't, from Wall Street where they come up with these great acronyms, but it was one of your friends. Well,
yeah,
I hope
exactly.
you paid him a pretty penny for that, Charlie.
You know what?
Charlie?
He's a good referrer.
Mm-hmm.
He's a fellow who is a leader in the industry and
mm-hmm.
has been quite a supporter of us over the years.
I can see why. Charlie, I have to break away just for a moment, you know, to identify our program.
Yeah.
And I'll be right back to you. And the question I'm going to ask you next when I do the announcements to where we're coming from, the radio one, I'm going to ask you the following question. Who's the perfect candidate for your Charlie defined benefit plan? So I'll come back to you in just about 1 minute.
Okay.
Again, this is Syndicated News. I'm Raymond F. Rivas, Chief Financial Editor. Our firm is Atherton Wealth Planning. And you can mail me any questions you want to ask Charlie at rivas@syndicatednews.net. And it's RIVAS. And you're listening to Syndicated News Net, brought to you this evening by Shadow Operations, LLC. And now back to my guest, Mr. Charlie, or Charles W. Day. Charlie, I do want to ask you, if someone wants to get a hold of you, will you go ahead and give the audience your website?
Yes, it's www.adatainc. It's adatainc.com.
Do you want to give it again one more time so we can
can
write it down?
A as in alpha, D as in delta, A as in alpha, T is in Tom, A
mm-hmm.
is in alpha, I is in ink, N is in nickel, C is in charlie.com.
Okay. Now, the question I was going to ask you after the announcement is, who is the perfect candidate for your Charlie defined benefit plan?
You know what, Ray? That's
mm-hmm.
that's the $64,000 question, because it's all over the map. Let me describe clients to you.
Mm-hmm.
one of our early clients was a professor at the University of Illinois who had over $1 million in royalty income. And he was referred to us, and he was in his late 50s, and his wife helped manage his book part of his business. And we created a $600,000 deduction for he and his wife, basically to set aside a lot of his royalty income into a pool that would provide him long-term financial security and then could pass on to his children. A pharmaceutical company wanted to build an employee benefit plan on the one hand that would be so compelling that either their employees would not want to leave or it could be a great attraction tool. But at the same time, they didn't want to reward employees who left with large cash distributions. Two guys were in the oil and gas business that is well servicing, and they noticed that they had a profit sharing plan. They just paid out a 25% bonus, and they noticed that everybody was taking their money and buying pickup trucks every January. And so they saw that, you know, where the money was going. And so they were spending it as opposed to saving it. And so we created a program for them that's become a standard. Medical practices, physicians who, you know, have a hard time agreeing within their own organizations and to what they should do and how they do it, and especially when it comes to personal investments. So we set up a program for the employees, given the maximum benefits under the code, that allows each doctor to do his own thing. You know, one guy doesn't want to put any money aside because he's got housing costs and educational expenses, but the guy who's older wants to take and shelter all his income. I have an attorney that's of counsel who's 86 years old, Ray. He makes over $300,000, and he said, "Charlie, I don't need this income." So we created a defined benefit plan where he was able to defer all the income that this law firm was paying him to supervise or oversee the professional work of his people. One of my clients is an electrical contractor. He's a big one. He builds plants for General Electric. And he has 40 electrical engineers, and the rest are union employees. And he had an old DB plan with a couple of million dollars of excess assets, and they came to me and he said, "Hey, how do we solve this problem?" I said, "Just increase the liability. You'll take care of the excess assets. And, oh, by the way, if you change to a joint and survivor benefit and eliminate the lump sum, you will have a benefit structure that no one will want to leave. And, by the way, since you're so well-funded, you know, you'll be so competitive in the construction business that you can provide benefits with no charge against your working capital." I've got a number of clients who are in the construction business who are very profitable. And one of them is a concrete cutting company. They're one of the largest on the Eastern Seaboard. And they use this as a recruiting tool to get guys to do the kind of hard work that cutting concrete involves. I mean, they did the interstate through Philadelphia as an example, where they had to bring barges in and support the the highway while they work through the situation. And they provide a 100% pension, 100% joint and survivor, no lump sum. Now, there are four family members in this business. Mom and dad know that their long-term financial security is secured. Both of them have a $15,000 pension, so they're going to have a $30,000 pension when they walk out here in the next 5 years. And if they survive, fine. But if they die early, the assets come back to the firm to help finance the pension benefits and stay. Okay.
Well, what about the individuals who have these large IRAs or these large 401 plans? And, you know, they're 68 years of age, or someone's an attorney or something. And he says, you know, right now I'd like to go, and if I had only started earlier, you know, what can I do? Let's assume what this attorney might have, let's say, $3, $4 million in his account. Do you help someone like that?
Right. Buckle your seatbelt again.
Hold on, I'm doing that again.
I mean,
go ahead.
You know, just down the road from you in Orange County is one of my favorite clients who's an economist who over the last 10 years has put close to $6 million into his plan. And this was about 3 years ago. He came to me and said, "Charlie, now, you know, I have $4 million in an IRA from an old profit-sharing plan. What should I do with that?" He said, "Is there a way to avoid estate tax on that?" And I said, "Ed, yes." He said, "How do you do it?" I said, "Well, let's start with a basic concept. You got the $4 million.
Mm-hmm.
If you went to Prudential or PAC Life or Pacific Life, you could buy an annuity to get an income for the rest of your life, and the assets that bought that annuity wouldn't be included in your estate, right?" "Yeah.
That's
but
true.
They keep the money when I die, right?"
"That's the bad part."
"Yeah. So I said, but here, Ed, we have this defined benefit plan that you've been funding for the last 10 years that doesn't provide a lump sum, but it provides this benefit." And that benefit is like the insurance company. So you could bring your $4 million over into the plan and tell the trustees of the plan, "Take my $4 million and give me a monthly benefit as long as I live." Ray, he said, "Oh, my God. You mean if I do that, the $4 million goes off my estate balance sheet so I don't pay estate tax on that?" And I said, "Yes."
That's astonishing.
It's just like you went to Prudential or PAC Life to buy an annuity. But here's the good news. If you die, there's a gain to the plan, but your family members are in the plan, and they will wind up controlling that gain if it were to occur, and it can add to their ultimate retirement benefit. So we're just taking fundamental principles of retirement plans that are in the business of providing benefits. When you start thinking in terms of benefits as opposed to account balances,
how does life insurance come into this equation? Because generally when you think of a defined benefit plan, that insurance is paid and becomes part of the defined benefit in that lump sum distribution that the IRS will attack. What does yours do differently?
Well, it all comes back to the premise of, do you have a right to the asset. Do you have a fundamental right to walk into the plan and take money out? If you don't, all the rules change. So what you're substituting is this right for the ability to control.
Okay.
So if you don't have the right of ownership, there is no estate tax ramification. There's no, the operative term is incidence of ownership. If you don't have a right to an asset, and you don't have a right to name the beneficiary, and you can't distribute, have the assets distributed to you, then the asset is not attributed to you, and thus it's not in your estate. Well, in the pension document, the right to the beneficiary rights
mm-hmm.
are superseded by the plan provisions, which say if you die, your wife under the Retirement Equity Act is the first in the hierarchy of beneficiaries.
Okay.
But a spouse can utilize what's called a qualified disclaimer. A qualified disclaimer is the Internal Revenue Service commissioner said, you can disclaim a right, and it's not a gift of either present or future interest, which means it's not subject to estate tax.
So are you saying that if you do the thing properly, if you do the life insurance properly and the defined benefit properly, that the proceeds of the life insurance will not be included in determining the estate tax?
That's correct.
That's a
because
powerful thing.
Because you don't
have it. That's a powerful thing.
Exactly. Now, what we do is we have we specify to the agent how to design the insurance. The insurance needs to be contractually paid up at retirement.
Okay.
So when you add insurance, in order for it to be contractually paid up at retirement, the premium is about twice what a normal premium would be.
Okay.
Because what you're doing is putting a lot more cash into the policy, so it'll have the reserves to maintain the death benefit until you die.
But wait a minute, Charlie. You said if you do what you're suggesting, then what you're really saying is that when you put the money into the defined benefit plan, that's a tax deduction. So in reality, you are really buying a life insurance policy with tax deduction funds.
Well, that's true. If I'm funding the benefit by itself
mm-hmm.
and I add an incidental death benefit to it, it'll increase my deduction by about 30%.
Okay.
Now, when you increase a deduction, you know, it's one thing to have a deduction, but do you increase the value that comes from that deduction? And the answer is yes.
Oh, absolutely, from the way it sounds. You know, Charlie, I have to just break away one more time for station identification. I hope you don't mind.
Sure.
And this is Syndicated News, and I'm Raymond F. Rivas, Chief Financial Editor. Again, the name of our firm is the Atherton Wealth Planning here in Atherton, California. You're listening to syndicatednews.net, brought to you this evening by Shadow Operations. And I want to come back to my guest, Mr. Charles W. Day, with a fascinating way of thinking about retirement, usage of the defined benefit plan and all those, and comparing that with what's normally used. Charlie, I'm going to ask you one more time. Would you give your website one more time in case people do want to get hold of you? Because I find this absolutely fascinating. So give it to me one more time so, again, people can write it down.
It's www.adatainc.com.
Now, I'm going to throw a
www.adatainc.com.
I'm going to go ahead and throw you a curveball here, Charlie. As I understand it, after talking with one of your people there at the office, he was telling me that if you do it properly, there are some insurance companies that can even pay you 3, 4, 5 times the face of the insurance policy, and it's a special rider that's out there, which makes this even more compelling. Would you mind speaking about that for a moment or two?
Well, we're getting pretty complicated when you get into that, and I don't think we have enough time to really do it justice.
Oh my gosh, you're right. We are running out of time pretty soon. So
basically, mm-hmm. You're operating through operation of law in a pension plan.
Okay.
I have a death benefit in my pension plan, and I wanted to go to a trust. If my wife, who is the first in the hierarchy of beneficiaries, disclaim it, and the second in the hierarchy is my trust, the death benefit from the pension plan can go to my trust.
Okay.
If that trust, this is outside the pension plan.
Okay.
If there is a second insurance policy with a option provision in it that allows us to receive proceeds from the pension plan,
mm-hmm.
those proceeds can be used to go back to my surviving spouse's original age.
Okay.
And buy up a death benefit on her life, paid up, of 5 times the original amount. So let's just play a game here. Let's say you and I are married, husband and wife. I die. The death benefit is offered to you as my surviving spouse. You disclaim it.
Let's assume that it's $1 million.
It's $1 million. And you disclaim it. It goes to my trust.
Okay.
So $1 million comes into my trust, and my trust has a policy with this option in it. Maybe it's a $100,000 policy with this option.
Okay.
And the trustee comes to you and says, look, we have this option on your life, Mrs. Rivas, and do you have any objection to us? We can do it without your approval, but we just want to exercise this option to get $5 million on your life, and we have the funds to do it, and that's all it takes, and it's a guaranteed issue step.
Now, I contrast that if I happen to have, let's assume I've got a 401k, and I have a total of $1 million, and so the first concern I have is that upon my demise, that's going to be subjected to federal
estate tax,
income taxes, and so therefore that $1 million, for all intents and purposes, is going to be reduced accordingly.
Right.
So what you're saying, by using what the Charlie plan will offer, it will offer that same monthly income stream that you might mimic, that you might have gotten off that 401k. But the difference between the two is, because the way it's structured, that upon the husband's death, if he's the participant, that a life insurance policy will be paid, offered to the spouse. She can disclaim that, and that can be put into an islet or one of the irrevocable instruments, resulting
yeah.
in something that instead of it being subjected to the federal estate tax, it avoids the estate tax because of the way it's structured. If done properly, and if we have a husband and wife combination, and we both have a life insurance policy, and I pass away again first, it pays the $1 million, and then the wife, which would be my wife, would go ahead, and when she passes away, if the trustee had exercised the rider properly, that it would be worth perhaps even 5 times that amount of money. So therefore,
yep.
it might be worth $5 million.
Yep.
In essence, that's which is there's no estate taxes due, so the individual, let's assume it's an attorney or a physician, whoever has this program, has to make the decision. Should they continue to stay into a defined contribution plan, IRA, 401k, and subject that lump sum distribution to estate tax and income taxes, or perhaps consider this and perhaps make a tremendous difference for the family itself.
Yep, you got it.
My gosh.
You got it. We have a whole variety. One of our clients is an ophthalmologist, mm-hmm. and his wife is a CPA who runs his firm.
Yes.
And they have about 25 employees, and this guy has got a very sophisticated operation, and his pre-tax income is about $1.5 million. And we have a Charlie plan where he's covering all his employees at 100% of their pay, 100% for both the employee and his spouse.
Mm-hmm.
And he was complaining because he needed more deductions. It was, and so I said to him, look, what are you paying your wife? Paying her $30,000 a year. She's been running this thing for 25 years. And so I turned to the CPA and I said, look, she is a CPA by training.
Mm-hmm.
What would it cost us to hire somebody to do what she does? He said $100,000. So we've been paying her 30 years at $25,000. We've got a lot of back pay.
Oh, here. My gosh.
So, Ima really likes me because
yeah,
she got a pay raise of over $300,000.
Oh my goodness!
And of course that just doubled the pension deduction because we brought Ima in at the 415 limit, and so as a result, we have both Jim and Ima. Receiving close to 19,000 because they're in their 60s and they're going to retire in their late 60s, so they're getting close to $20,000 a month pension each.
Oh, wow!
And
Charlie, I don't mean to interrupt. We have about 2 minutes, and
yeah.
what I wanted to ask you is there anything else that you really wanted to cover? That you said that you would like to tell this radio audience because I don't know about all the rest of the listeners. But I am just absolutely captivated as to what's out there that you can help, you know, clients do. There seems
well,
to be so many things that are out that we don't know anything about.
Really,
so in the last minute and a half of our time, what would you like to say?
Ray, the takeaway is that when you remove the lump sum provision from a traditional defined benefit plan, there's a major change in the paradigm. You as a business owner have total control over your employee costs because the assets aren't leaving anymore. You have freedom to do whatever you want to if you have multiple high compensated people. They can have
Charlie,
their own plan.
I hate to cut you off, but we're at the end of our program. I got to tell you, this is one of the most fascinating programs I've ever had on the air. And it certainly is. It takes a talent like you or your firm to help so many of the these folks who have these horrible income taxes. So I'm going to ask you one more time for your website, and then we have to close. And it's just been a fascinating evening. So give your website one more time, and we'll close.
www.adatainc.com, and if you want to have a follow up, you get some good queries. I'll be glad to do that.
I got to tell you, there's so many questions. It's I can see as to why folks, business people, physicians, attorneys, large corporations come to someone like yourself. I'm sure they're just floored as to what's possible if they find the right expert. And Charlie,
well, if you let an actuary in your life, you know, it'll change you.
I can see it. I just want to thank you. It's been an absolute joy having you on the air. And I'm sorry we ran out of time because I know there's so much I wanted to ask you. And maybe we'll do this again and just continue the conversation. I want to thank you tremendously. And again,
right.
we're going to close the show. And again, this is Syndicated News. I'm Raymond F. Rebus, Chief Financial Editor, and my guest this evening has been Mr. Charles W. Day, and it's been an absolute joy. Charlie, thank you very much for this wonderful evening.
Good night, Ray. Bye.
Good night.